Attention, Blacklisters, this is your host, Aaron Peterson, and I am here to speak for Troy and myself, which is, this is a little bit of a PSA. You're about to hear an episode where we covered both Victoria Fenberg and Cornelius Ruck. The reason why we talked about them as one is because we reviewed them as one, and then NBC had to do a schedule change at the last minute to delay it so that you aired 1 hour the previous week on March 20th, and then 1 hour on March 27th. So we're speaking about them as one whole item because that's how we watch them. So if you hear that and you're wondering why are they talking about it like they both aired together when they didn't, that's why. So we just wanted to give you a heads up so this episode doesn't sound weirder than it might already sound. I don't know what to tell you. But thanks for everybody for coming back, and we're back in Blacklist. Take care.
This is T. Cooper, one of the writers of episode 711, Victoria Fenberg.
Hey, this is Lucas Reiter, executive producer and the writer of episode 712, Cornelius Ruck. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed
on Golden Spiral Media.
Man, that was a long break, and it was rejuvenating, but I'm hardly a vampire. Welcome back to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson. And Troy, do you know what this means?
What?
The butler did it. Thanks for joining us yet again for the mid-season 7 premieres. We discuss 137, Victoria Fenberg, and number 155, Cornelius Ruck. The first hour was written by Allison and T. Cooper and directed by Bill Rowe, with the second hour written by Lucas Reeder and directed by John Terlesky. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. And yes, I did have a whole lot of Clue running through my mind, and some Knives Out, and some Agatha Christie, and a whole bunch of other stuff at the second hour for this thing. It was pretty good.
They were dropping like flies fairly quickly in that second hour, though. I was like,
yeah, I was like, this
stretch out the mystery a little bit, you know?
This is the quickest murder mystery ever. Ever. I know who did it, because nobody else is alive.
That's right. And Red even shot one of the guys.
I know. It was just, I guess there's no mystery. All right. Get it that way.
Well, for those that are just coming back to the podcast this week, we want to let you know that we had two special podcasts during the break. One was a special message from John Bokenkamp about the season 8 renewal, and that they have officially filmed 150 episodes of our beloved TV show.
What?
That's a lot of TV. Mm-hmm. And the other was a support of potential TV show pilot that your faves themselves, yes, Dembe and Cooper, Hisham and Harry, were actually in, called Conrad. So be sure you go back and check those two episodes out.
Yeah, and Eric Roberts was on that too. That was pretty cool.
I really hope he comes on the show. Really hope he comes on the show.
I hope so. We've plugged it. All right. If you are, you know what, that also means that we've had over 150 episodes of this very podcast, correct?
I believe when I saw in Pocket Cast the other day, it was 175, if you include season one when we did it with Dave. So I have done 175 Blacklist podcasts.
Oh yeah, I guess I haven't. I wasn't there that first season.
Right.
There's at least 22 dum-dums that are missing.
Do you know what that means, collection? Though? That means that when season 8 is over, we will officially cross 200 podcasts.
How's that feel?
Feels exhausting. I mean, I might need another break. Where's a cart that someone could pull me around on?
Just think of all the hours you could have spent playing PlayStation or something, whatever it is you do on the weekends. All that is well said and done. That's great, Troy. But I want to talk about the return of my show, that we have a nice extended episode for you this week. We do things a bit different here. If you're new to the show, we break down the episode succinctly, since we assume you all watched it. Then we go by character to see if their stories make any sense, if they are staying true to the character, etc., before having a little bit of fun with a segment we call Red's Rhetoric. And then finally, hear from all of you during our Special Agent Intel segment. Not sure we're going to get much Special Agent Intel this time, but we're going to try and get it.
Yeah, we'll also talk about some things about the show that don't relate to these episodes in particular during that time as well. We got a lot to cover this week, so before someone makes a counterfeit of the podcast, let's go ahead and dig into this week's case profile.
Sounded like you were going to lose your breath there. Sounded like you were going. Were you dying?
I was dying. Coronavirus has infiltrated the podcast.
Oh, my God. Hopefully, by the time this airs, it's done. It's done. You know what? It took out my festival. Did you know that? Did I tell you that? Yeah, did I tell these guys that?
South by Southwest is canceled.
Yeah. They canceled my festival, people.
The question is are they going to write a coronavirus episode for season 8 now?
I don't know, but they should do a whodunit, because I'm going to find out who caused this, because you cost me my festival. No, but if you have it, or if you've been affected by it, wishing you the best. Hopefully everything turns out.
Wash your hands.
I wash my hands. So we attended a class, a mandatory coronavirus class. Can I just tell you? It's the same class my grandma taught when I was six. Wash your hands. Wash them, wash them, wash them. Don't touch people. And don't touch your face a lot.
There you go.
Thanks. Thanks, CDC. Appreciate the tips. All right, so here's our case profile. We've got two episodes. We had a 2-hour season 7 return. And unlike many of the 2 hours we've seen in the past, it's not two completely separate episodes. These feel connected. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I'm glad they were connected, because I felt like the first hour really didn't give a whole lot. So if this was a long hiatus and you were coming in with just that first hour, you might be a little disappointed. So thankfully, the second hour was there to reconcile and save it, because I thought combined the two episodes, it was a really fun little ditty. And one of the things I was really surprised about by watching it, I felt like, well, we got season 8 renewed. And if they wanted to keep the show going for season 9, season 10, season 11, I felt like this was an example of how you could do the show without the rest of the task force. Because at first, hour was like Red and his friends with Dembe. They're going off to Russia and doing whatever. And it just felt like you didn't need the task force. Like, they could really keep Red's going into Red's past and checking up with a bunch of his old friends. And then the second hour didn't have a task force in it at all, except for the ballet recital. I mean, that was all Red in that episode. So it was really interesting to figure out what all happened in that regard. And is that a model we can think of going forward if they go to season 9?
As long as they answer everything in season 8.
Correct.
Then I'm good. Yeah, yeah. I'm good with that. I'm good with whatever. I just want answers. I want the truth. Well, here's what happened in this first hour. Rich people take art way too seriously. We learned that. It's very important. I don't understand why people take this so seriously.
Learned that? I thought that was always the case.
It was, but I'm saying it was taught. It was reverbed. Okay. Here in this episode.
Gotcha.
And I'm just like, wow, these people really take art seriously. Oh, it's a fake. Hey, man, it still looks like the same one. I'm good with that. I'm fine.
You can take a photo of it. I'm good with the photo, too.
Yeah, I'm really not that fancy.
It's pretty.
In the first hour, a copycat art thief, Victoria Fenberg, is not only making counterfeit art items to profit from the original, she's actually stealing from her own family's personal collection to help her accomplice fund a lawsuit against her father's pharmaceutical company. Now, this episode is just the setup to the real plot at hand, which is the second hour where Red and five of his closest criminal friends make a deal to each hold on to one of six golden caskets that work much like a Russian, it was a Russian doll, right? Where they all pile into
stack
each other.
Up into each other, yep.
Yeah, they're a jewel of their own, but you put them together and they're worth a fortune. So the first hour is really just setting that up. And I gotta say, if you take them apart, I don't want to be too harsh. I didn't really enjoy the first hour that much. It's a lot of setup, though, because it didn't feel like a Blacklist episode to me for most of it, really. I really just didn't feel like she was as Blacklist-y as most Blacklisters. You get what I'm saying? I hope I'm making sense somewhere.
Yeah, there was a lot of jump to conclusion in that episode, I guess, would be. We didn't get a lot of good backstory as to the why. It was, oh, here's this guy who just happens to be helping her. And you don't even find out why she's helping her until mid-episode. And then, like, only 3/4 of the way up, and do you find Donald looking at a picture about the kid and go, oh, it's about his son. That's what this is all about. So it felt like it was very loosely tied in and not real. I think the caskets were more a Blacklister than the person, right? Because the whole purpose of that first hour was to get to the whole conversation between Red and Liz in the car.
I feel like maybe some of that's expectation, too. You know, when that first hour is going, you kind of come off the finale, which mid-season finale, which I rewatched. You come into this one probably with expectations, and maybe I had them, too. I try not to when I watch an episode, but I'm not going to lie. Sometimes that happens. And when you get to that first hour, and there's really barely even a mention of Katerina except for a mild conversation. You know, I mean, you feel a little bummed in some respect because you at least want something, and we got nothing. We got nothing both hours in terms of the Katerina plot.
I felt like we knew that the Katerina plot, that we weren't going to get a lot of coming back. I thought it was going to be one of those like 6 episodes.
True. I was expecting something.
I thought it was going to be more bombastic, I think, is the thing, right? After 3 months of being off and it's a 2-hour premiere, you're all like, yeah, I'm going to buckle in and sit down and just be like, wow. You know, and then it goes into that 6 episode, you know, we got to fill the time kind of thing. But even this first hour, the second hour, you know, helped. It was definitely better and much more entertaining. But I think putting them together, it's like, yeah, it's a mid-season finale. It feels very much like the season 4 return, where we had the whole Kirk and the whisper in the ear, and it's all like dramatic, and where did Kirk go, and Red's holding the baby in the crib, and then you come back after that, and it's like, oh, well, it's just like, you know, people that can predict the weather. Okay.
Probably. True, but it's just like by the end of the second, it's just so confusing, I guess, man, because in Liz's mind, her mother's alive, and yes, she does ask Red the question, and she rolls her eyes. She acknowledges that he is not acknowledging the question.
Right.
She's finally on to the fact that he is not directly answering the question. Thankfully. Only took 7 seasons, but we're there. Woohoo! I just felt like there should have been more animosity from Liz at this point. She just felt a little too welcoming to Red, especially the play in the second hour. You know what I mean? Am I wrong on that? Because that felt genuine.
It did, but she's got to keep up the facade, though, because Red thinks Katarina is dead, so, and she knows that she's not, and so therefore she's got to keep playing Red the way she played Red at the start of the 6th season.
But that felt genuine, though. At no point did I feel like she was playing Red. At no point were we given an indication she was playing. I think she was really happy he was there.
Oh, at the end of the second hour at the play?
Yeah, the second hour at the play, yeah.
Well, I don't think she's got animosity towards Red specifically. It's hard to tell. Yeah, it almost feels like the end of the episode with the play felt more like what would have been a mid-season 6 episode after the I love you moment than it would be mm-hmm. after I just, you know, had my mom chasing me down and you were hiding her from me and you still won't tell me the truth, even though I know she's my mom. And
you tried to kill her point blank.
Yeah, exactly.
There's something to think about. Episode 2 is our little Agatha Christie story. The second hour, as John said, turns into a game of Clue as one of the 6 dies unexpectedly, followed by another and then another. And then everybody's dead, pretty much. Turns out the smallest of the 6 caskets contains a micro dot that is a list Turkish agents were working on in the American government. The Turks want it back and hire Cornelius Ruck to play the butler, Arthur Rodman, in this game of whodunit. But in the end, Red gets the best of them all and splits the sale of the caskets with an old flame he left behind, similar to Madeline Pratt, because he had to intervene in Elizabeth's life. Except he makes out with this one.
He sure did. A lot. Well, she kind of smooches him, like grabs him a little bit more. I think she's more into him than he's into her, to be quite honest.
Not by the end. By the end, I'm pretty sure he's really into her.
Yeah, potentially.
No, not potentially. He was into her. Maybe hanky-panky.
Maybe he's just tired. He's like, yeah, France sounds great.
Sounds like they had a nice 4 days, huh?
Sure did.
Feels like Red's quite the man.
Do you feel like, I remember seeing the pictures and the hype, and they're like, oh, Red's flame is back, and this is going to be like such a big episode, and there was a lot of buildup in the media for this. Do you feel like this paid off? Do you feel kind of let down based on the hype for this old flame coming back? Like, did you think she was going to be more involved in a multi-episode arc?
Because Joey Richardson is here, right. And you thought that would... I mean, I felt like we got pretty much what I expected out of it. I really didn't feel like it would be drug out. You kind of got the indication that there was a point where Red was ready to walk away from all this for this woman that he loved. And then he was brought back into the fold to fulfill an obligation, as they both stated, I believe.
Because Tom's going to Tom.
Because Tom's going to Tom. You know, that's all Tom does. He just toms it up. And then he decided not to. So, yeah, I got pretty much what I thought I was going to get. I never thought like they were going to have a long whirlwind romance or anything. Is that what you were expecting?
Not like a romance, but I thought with the way they were playing up her character, I thought maybe she was going to have, again, this is all expectations again. You assume that she's going to have some nugget of the past that's going to come in and drop something that's going to give an answer for the future and be around for a couple episodes, the way they were playing it up in the media.
Mm. I thought it would be more revealing. I thought we'd get a little bit more insight into Red and what he was doing before he came into Liz's life, and I don't think we got much of that.
No, not at all.
But that's the media. I mean, I can't say what they're going to play up. That all that NBC said was a former flame comes into his life and da-da-da-da. Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah, the media likes to hype up stuff for no apparent reason.
They need clicks, man. They need clicks. And I get it. I mean, that's how they survive. So you got to go in. You got to get people to check out your articles. So you do a lot of theorizing and punditizing and opinionating. And that's really what most of those articles were. NBC's just like, former love. or I don't even know if they said former love, but a woman from Red's past or something like that is all I said. And people just jump. So some fun things that happened in this episode. Margo's shot game was really fun. I'd be so sober because I couldn't get any of those locks, which is thankful because I think I'd be dead. I think the shots were poisoned.
I'm pretty sure they were.
Yeah. See what I'm saying? So I would be alive. You'd probably make it too. Although you're kind of a little robot, so you might figure some of those out.
I might get three. Those last two looked really difficult.
Did you time it? Did you time it to make sure it was 30 seconds? Because I did.
No.
I did not. Made it.
I'm not that crazy. It's TV. I'm sure she made it 30 seconds.
That was a fun game. Joke, I like that one.
I like the game. The game was fun.
And then this is also the episode where Red plays Sherlock Holmes. Or, you know, Benoit Blanc, whatever you're into. Sorry,
tries to play Sherlock Holmes because it just goes so fast.
Yeah, and then he does an autopsy, which was amazing. He uses a knife, tongs, and a ladle to perform an autopsy. I've never seen this done. I mean, I'm not a man of science, but I'm pretty sure this was on the fly. I don't recall them ever doing this in medical school.
Well, and this is one thing that I didn't have time to double check, but I wanted to look it up to say, is the procedure that he was doing, not so much the cutting and the spreading, but the whole your blood mixed with liquid and the whole ladle thing to see how much quantity there was, if that's actually something that would be in real life. Like, was that a real life thing that they could actually test for? And was that all on the up and up, or was that TV?
I mean, I do that with soup. So if I can do it with soup, I'm assuming yes.
Well, I'm not saying the concept of does liquid actually fill up a ladle? That's not what I'm talking about.
No, I'm saying I can check, I can get break it out and get a little thicker. You know, you just let all the juice in as opposed to, you know, I don't know. Just assuming the soup theory works.
Yeah, I was just wondering if that was like a valid test for poison in your system. Like it seemed interesting.
You know, Troy, it's TV. I just take it for what it is.
It's one of the more creative scenes I've seen in a long time, and I loved it. I thought that was fun. Yeah.
Especially when the tongs were there holding it open. I'm like, oh my God, that's funny. Like, that's pretty funny.
The sexual tension between the two of them over a dead open body.
It was palpable. All right, how about killing Joko and cutting his fingers off first? That was kind of brutal.
Yeah, I thought this was where in the episode I'm like, okay, this is going to be fun. We got the guy, obviously the guy that was administering the game. He's the first suspect because he was the one sitting in front of the vodka and set it all up for her. And then he becomes the next one dead. It's pretty standard fodder when you think of that direction. But just the fact that it was like a completely different motive, the fact that he was chopping off the little pieces to leave the trail, I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. I don't know where this is going to go. I'm intrigued. Then it just escalated from there so quickly. Like, at least it was poison, because Annika... Or Anika? Was that Anika or Annika? I forget. But one of those
two. Ways.
She's the one that was like doing the inhaler thing. So she ended up dying from poison as well. So the fact that there was a non-poison thing I thought they would just do the poison the whole way through. So it was interesting to see the little trail of cut up stuff to throw you off the scent. Maybe there were two killers.
Were you a little disappointed in terms of that it wasn't more about a murder mystery?
I mean, only because John left the message in the last podcast that said it was like the Blacklist version of Clue. So again, expectation gets raised when that gets said. So you go in thinking you're going to get something, and then it's close, but it's not quite what you were expecting when you think of Clue.
I mean, it kind of was the Blacklist version, though. I mean, you start with the murder mystery, and then it goes into we're just going to take out these agents, and it becomes espionage and flat out murder.
Sure. Yeah. I thought it was going to be more like the big reveal at the end kind of thing versus revealing 10 minutes in. And then it was like, oh, it's really about the micro dot. Okay.
So did I, especially when he's doing autopsies and everything else. And then they had that meeting, the little reservoir dogs meeting in the garage, and then everybody dies there. So it made it really easy to kind of pin. Well, it's either her or someone else. And the only other person was the butler.
Right.
And all he does is buttle.
And what a convenient factor that a storm is coming in to block us all in here for 2 days.
I like it. And you didn't get any, the other players didn't make a point to show up until the end, except for Dembe at the beginning. So, I mean, it's really a Red-centric episode, which I wonder if people are going to have an issue with, because typically whenever you get an only Red episode, you get a lot of mythology detail, and this one did not have that.
Yeah, I could see that, I suppose.
I'm just saying off viewer expectations. I liked it, because you know me, I like murder mystery, that's my favorite. Of any genre.
There's the other half of the audience that's like, I just want to see Red. I don't care about everybody else. They don't want Liz to be on the screen. They don't want all the fluff between Aram and Elodie. You know, they just want their red. So for half the audience, they're probably like, this is the greatest episode ever. I got red the whole time.
Yeah, we got to get into the characters. I mean, really, Aram is the one that got most of the action. I said it. We'll get there in a second. But it is all about getting a microdot with names of people working in their government. And then we hear a story about how Red really was obsessed with the insects. I'll talk more about that when we get to characters. But he did make a microscope with his phone. That was pretty clever.
Yeah, I want to look that up on the internet, too, to see if that's real, because that's kind of fun.
I don't care if it's real. Does it need to be real? I don't care if it's real.
I have done that, though, you know, getting to my old age. I have done the zoom in on the text in order to, like, read it bigger. I have done that once. Maybe it's because my eyes were tired that day. I don't know.
I mean, whatever works. I mean, I will tell you that if you watch HBO's The Outsider, that black light with the phone does not work. That's 100% certain. So I'm assuming this is probably just a TV gimmick. Yeah, I liked it. I didn't care. I liked it.
This one I could believe more because at least he used part of the binocular.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you know they sell those like extended lenses that you can put on your phones to do like wide angle or telephoto. So I mean, mm-hmm. you know that the camera actually does work with additional lenses. So that's at least plausible in that regard. I'm trying to figure out what the tape part of it actually helps with.
Holds it in place.
Oh, I thought it was a tape that was going like between the two lenses to like magnify or do the, or it was like a lens thing where it would flip the picture or something like that. But I'm like, every piece of tape I know, you can't see through. It's not clear tape except for the Christmas stuff. Yeah,
I thought it was just for bonding elements.
Maybe.
Well, we're in a weird conversation now. Let's talk about tape for 20 minutes. How you doing?
Well, there's duct tape. There's translucent. There.
Let's go to music. One of these songs, I will tell you, is one of my favorite running songs.
Oh, like you've actually heard the song before and you use it when you run.
I run, and if you've watched John Wick, you've heard it many times as well. But yes, it's definitely a song I run to quite frequently.
Well, the first hour, one song was Vitaris as he makes his distraction for Victoria to steal the Hulkstra piece of art. We hear starts right here from Battle Tapes and Valerie Broussard. And then in the second hour, during the opening, we hear Ancient Aviator by Serpent Power as Red arrives at the mysterious island. No, not that island.
Are they lost?
It actually reminded me of the Orphan Black Island, if you're an Orphan Black fan, up in the Baltic Sea.
Stop being a nerd.
Later, as the Turks and Cornelius do battle with Cassandra and Red, we are treated to Killing Strangers by Marilyn Manson. And you can hear all of those on the playlists at Spotify and the one we create on the Apple Music. You can get all those at theblacklistexposed.com.
So of those three, which one do you think is the one that I run to?
I would assume it's Marilyn Manson's.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, it's got that.
It's got a great beat, man. It's got, if you're a runner, which I'm sure, I don't know how many of you are, but if you're a runner like I am, which is dumb because it's going to hurt my knees eventually. But any song with a consistent, steady beat that's catchy, it's great for running, especially if it amps up, because then you get a little momentum and you die down, you get a little momentum, you die down, and that song is perfect for that.
It was so good, in fact, with the beat that my wife yelled up and was like, can you tell the daughter to turn her music down?
Oh, like, man. Like, she's like, I know you ain't listening to it.
I'm like, I think that's my TV. Because the subwoofer sits right on top of the bedroom.
All right, let's move into characters. I'll be honest, we don't have a ton of character stuff.
No, so it should go fairly quick this week. We'll get people in and out of here.
I think so. Well, we always say that, and then it's like 90 minutes later. All right, so Aram, he eats erasers, okay, and he's still shagging the lady with the handy husband with him in the house.
On a ventilator.
And now he's on a ventilator. Oh, boy. I want to say this. I want to get ahead of the game, okay, in case the writers are listening. Please don't do a subplot where they assist suicide or he gets framed for his murder. Please. I'm begging you. Please don't do that. That's the only thing that I was thinking of the entire thing is that she's going to want to kill him or she's going to want to frame Aram for it or something along those lines. And I just don't want that to be a subplot because that just feels too soap opera for me.
And I'm just like thinking about people complain about sleeping next to somebody when they're snoring. Can you imagine like having to sleep next to someone with that? Is that Darth Vader?
That's funny. And like, what if you're making the sweet love and then you hear that going, can you keep going? I couldn't keep going. I'd be like, all right, we're going to have to roll him downstairs.
Do you match the rhythm?
Do you match the rhythm?
That's so wrong.
And so right.
Oh my gosh.
So where do we stand with the old Aram and Elodie here? Are you on board with this still? Are you tired of this plot? Do you want him to move on? I mean, for a minute, I got kind of excited, thought he was going to move on and do the right thing. I thought he was going to Spike Lee right out of there, but that didn't happen.
I mean, it gives Aram's character something to do, but in the context of the show, it's just so not needed. The only purpose of this was for them to get to the wedding to get the thing, and now they got the thing and they use the thing. So what's the point of having the relationship still be on screen? You can still have the relationship off screen, but unless they're going to do something with this relationship, I don't need it in the show anymore.
What about her constantly asking and repeating case stuff that he's obviously sharing, which he's obviously bad about keeping secrets?
Well, I suppose because of that whole the thing that she was involved with, right? The the party, and they were going to kill her and everything. So she does probably have some connections somewhere potentially through her, you know, rich status, that she could share some information. So maybe you could write a story about that where she leaks some information and that gets Aram in trouble and they have to come save Aram. Mm-hmm. And then that finally breaks up the relationship. I could see that potentially happening.
What do you think about that though? Would that make the relationship at least worthwhile for you?
It would, at least if they're going to continue showing it to me on screen, it'll make it worthwhile. Like, you could keep the relationship, just not show it on screen. Maybe occasionally there's like a throw in like, oh, Elodie's doing great, thanks for asking, and move along to remind people that you have the relationship. But to show her on screen doing stuff with Aram, unless it's tied into the story, it's just like it's a cutaway moment. And I think there's enough cutaway moments with other characters that we could do that probably would be more important to the show.
Yeah, it still feels very much to me out of character. I mean, I guess at this point it's not out of character because it's in the character. Now I've been doing it for a little bit.
Yep.
To me, though, this feels like a storyline I would be really interested in if it was a different show.
Or maybe it's...
Does that make sense? I mean, like, the whole, I'm with a married woman but she's married to someone who's incapacitated, so she can't go on with her life because she cares about her husband, da-da-da-da, but we want to have a relationship. Like, that sounds like a fun storyline or an interesting storyline, but not in The Blacklist. Does that make sense to you? I just hope I'm not being too harsh.
No, but here's one way I think that this could work, and that's the fact that Liz obviously knows what's going on with Aram because they have their conversation. And Aram and Liz have this very close friendship, I think, at work between the two of the characters. So maybe Aram going through this and the whole conversation that we were set up with this week in the whole, did you think about killing him? Do you think it would be better if he was gone? All of that stuff. Maybe it's preparing Aram to have a conversation with Liz about what happens with her grandfather. Because her grandfather is technically still tied up to machines and hanging on for dear life. So maybe it's a, you know, is it better if he's dead versus not dead? And there's an episode like that that's coming down the line.
All right. That could work a little bit more for me. Now, you see, look, there you go. You found a way. That could work. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Dembe. I did like they used a small focus to paint by numbers. Was kind of a cool way to fake art. I liked how how she faked the art. And Aram was explaining it. That was just kind of a cool insight into how you would, if that's true, how you would fake a painting.
So there was a lot of lens, looking through the lens concepts, right? The whole magnifying glass thing, you had the paint by numbers thing, and then there was a weird camera shot. I don't know if you caught it.
It's all how you look at through the lens. Maybe it's real, maybe it's fake.
Not, right? Did you see that weird camera shot where she was on the phone talking to Victoria, and it looked like they shot it through the side view mirror? And then
yes. Yeah, that was cool.
I don't know if that was like an intentional thing or if that was a cut that shouldn't have been there and they forgot to take it out. I don't know. So
I liked it, though.
I did. It was interesting.
That's probably why they left it in. All right, Dembe. They do birthday parties in Criminal Undergrounds. I had no idea.
That opening scene was probably one of the best opening scenes ever.
Yeah, that was
so happy.
That was great. And they incorporated Dembe, real-life Dembe, Hisham Tawfiq's love for snowboarding into the character.
I laughed out loud. It's like, snowboarding, that's great. That's so
and
great.
Red bought him what I believe is a schmog scarf, I think is what they
call so,
it.
Believe so, yes.
Yeah. That was kind of a cool nod. And then we find out a little later that Dembe doesn't trust Cassandra. So he knows her as well. So he's familiar with Cassandra.
Right. Which means that we know that at least Cassandra in Red's life came at a point where Dembe was part of the organization.
Exactly.
Don't get an exact time, but we know it's after Dembe was 14 at least.
Yep. Exactly. So it's not much more on Dembe. I will say Cooper and Park were kind of absentees. They really didn't do much. They had a couple fill in the gap lines, and then they were at the play at the end, or the ballet at the end. That's about it, unless I missed something.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
Okay. Wrestler feels guilty over Katarina. Oh, I'm going to come back to this, but Liz does clean it up pretty quickly, so he doesn't feel guilty for long. Definitely coming back to that.
Yeah.
And then we learn that he was a dancer, that he danced.
We're men in tights.
I want to see that. And apparently he thinks he looks pretty good in tights.
Apparently he tells everybody.
Yeah, he does.
Man, I thought this was like an inside joke between him and Liz. And then he's just like, hey guys, I wore tights.
It's like seven seasons for this to come up. And now that it's out there, he wants everyone to know.
Rom, could you put that up on the screen, please?
We already talked about Katarina is nowhere to be found. She doesn't appear at all in this episode. She's referenced a couple times. Let's talk about Cassandra, Red's old flame. They spent 4 days together. She was going to leave her husband. And then apparently she took $40 million and then Red couldn't trust her. That's why he didn't go. That's partly why he didn't go.
Correct. And because she had to come take care of Elizabeth.
Said she'd do anything to go back to that suite. And then she did make the trade for Red's life. So I believe her love or affection is genuine.
I believe so too. I think that the two of them had something special and that they were really trying to work together. Cassandra just made poor choices.
How do you feel about the Cassandra?
I thought it was an interesting way to bring in an old flame. I think it was an interesting way to bring in an old partner because they were also part of a deal, if I remember correctly, with this $40 million. And so to have that in there and then have also the back and forth between the two of them and the understanding between the two of them, I think was really interesting. They had the whole conversation at the end of the episode when she's talking about, I can read you. So it feels like she really knows who Red is and how Red operates. And I think that gives us an insight into the character as well to say, if we're all still like, who is Red? You know, here's an insight into that he's still very much a family man because he cares about the granddaughter, cares about Elizabeth, and just lights up when he sees the Swan Lake at the end.
Yeah, that was a beautiful moment.
Or Cinderella, whatever it was. I forget.
That was a beautiful moment. Yep. And I'll be honest, I've seen lots of kids that are family friends and whatnot when they perform. I light up like that too. So you can read into it, whatever you want to read into it. But I'm telling you, it happens whether you're directly associated or not directly associated. It's just a beautiful thing to see a little kid that you care about up on stage doing stuff like that.
I feel like you say that just to riot up the people for no reason.
Makes me feel good.
Whether it's a grandpa or he's the creepy uncle, you know, you can do whatever you want.
I'm just saying, man. I remember watching my best friend's daughter, my goddaughter, in a play baseball game, and I was super proud. And I was beaming the same way, like an uncle. All right, Red. You're right. Maybe I do. Let's go to Liz. Actually, do they teach keeping secrets at the FBI? I really need to know. Like, is this something that they teach? Is it something in Quantico where they actually have a class and say, here's how you keep a secret? Because I think she missed that class.
This is the second time this season where Liz was just like, here, guys, let me run it down for you. I was like, wow, we're like 2 minutes in the episode. And she just like gave away the whole first half of the season. Okay. Sounds great. We're just going to go there. All right. Let's see where this goes. And you're telling it to the one person that feels bad about the whole situation on top of it.
I get that she trusts Wrestler and she's worried about his mental health, and that's good. She doesn't want to have that secret, which is good because she's not keeping him in the dark and making him suffer. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I want to throw that out there. I do appreciate that.
He's got a little bit of an addiction problem, so doesn't want that to resurface. So
exactly. Could we give it maybe the day? Maybe she takes the day to think about if she should tell him. The fact that she just threw it out there like a fishing lure was just a little too fast for my liking. And I was, wow. Just wow.
That was one of the cases where the writing was showing. Because it's like, oh, we had to tell this because we have to throw the line in there. Oh, Wrestler told us something.
Yeah. We got to remind people also of what happened to Katarina. Right. That's the way to do that. Without a whole bunch of previously on.
Well, it's funny because you talk about, like, you want to write the show so that people can come into the show at any point in time. Mm-hmm. But at the same point, it's like seven seasons in. I don't think people are jumping in here. So I think the people that are watching the show now are people that probably knew what happened to Katarina in the fall.
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm sure there's people that might jump in and they might pick up an episode and then just go back to Netflix and rewatch it all.
It's
so there's
possible.
That possibility. I know a lot of people that have come up to me this year that have said they just started watching it on Netflix and they love Blacklist and da-da-da because they were catching up on the podcast and stuff. I'm like, wow, you just started? That's great. I mean, that's great that they can do that. So it does happen.
It does. Except that season seven's not there for when they get done with six and they're all frustrated.
Yeah.
I gotta buy it now? What the hell?
Listen to the podcast. We'll tell you all about it. All right. So they have the conversation in the car, and she asks Red, was she my mother? Was Katerina her mother? To which he says, I know you don't want it to be true, but your mother is gone. Which means he doesn't directly answer her question. Liz rolls her eyes, so she knows he's not answering. What did you take away from that moment in the car?
I thought it was another great way for the John and John to keep the speculation train going. Because I was like, oh, he didn't say your mother's dead. He said your mother's gone. Mm-hmm. So there's the Katerina hopefuls, the Red Arena hopefuls. Get a nugget there. And then you have the fake arena camp gets to keep their thing going because the mother's dead. And that wasn't really Katerina that we saw in the first half of the season. So it was like classic Blacklist writing. It was just funny. It was like, oh my gosh, 7 seasons and we're still doing this kind of stuff.
Does that mean you appreciated it?
I did appreciate it because they're at least still having fun with it and it's still keeping true to the show. You know, I think as fans, it's probably, okay, it's a little tired now. We need an answer. But at the same time, they're at least keeping true to form versus writing something completely different like a Romanility.
Yeah, I actually really like the way that they played this because Liz does roll her eyes and she acknowledges that, okay, well, he's not going to answer this, so let's move on. I like that. I thought that was a really fun addition because I'm like, thank God. Because if she just took that as, okay, I would have been just irritated. And she didn't. She didn't seem to take it that way.
And I think part of the challenge with this is that this feels like an answer Red would have given before we knew about the bones reveal. Because it's like, oh, you know, things are different on the outside than they are on the inside. And there's the surface view versus what's really going on in that whole conversation they're having. So it feels like that would have been a better line back in season 5 or 4. So I thought that was interesting that they went that route here, if that means, oh, well, even Red's not who we think Red is still. And he's trying to give that hint to Liz.
Exactly. And Agnes is in Sleeping Beauty, we find out, which is a ballet. And then at the end, we watch her play. And honestly, it was very cute. It's very sweet. Everybody was smiling. Everybody was beaming. And she says to Red, we may not have bigger lives, but we have each other.
Aww.
Again, I just feel conflicted a little bit because of what she learned at the end of the mid-season finale, and it felt genuine, so it didn't feel to me like she was playing him, but either way, it worked.
Yeah, you get to that at the end, she's sitting next to Dom's bed, and Red's relaying the story, and you're like, she's dead, she's gone, and you lied to me again, Red! And then you get, oh, but we have each other. It's a standard Liz moment. It's the flip-flop again.
I guess you can call it a flip-flop. What I will say is this, is from these two episodes, even though Liz doesn't have a whole lot to do, she's got a lot more in the first episode, obviously. Throughout her entirety, the arc on these two episodes, she is very upbeat. She's very lively. She's very almost goofy in a way, like in a good way, like just jovial and just a very warm and charming person. These two episodes, she's very much like Megan Boone, as opposed to, you know, we met her. She's very much like that as a person, very upbeat and happy and just bouncy. And I don't know how else to describe her. She's a very nice person.
Yeah, loves being a mom and all that other fun stuff. Yeah,
all that other stuff. Just loves life and everything else. And that came across very much like, oh, because it didn't have all the dark and, oh, what am I going to do? My mom, my Red, and all the pain that she's had to suffer through over this last 7 seasons. Like, it just felt very much like, oh, she got to be herself for a couple episodes.
And I think the one thing that may be in character, because she feels like, I know who my mother is, and she's alive. I know who my father is, and I know he's dead. I know this person's not my father, but he still cares about me, so I have people in my life. I feel safe. So maybe that's why she's playing it as bubbly as she is in this particular episode, because she finally feels content and okay, and that Agnes can dance and everybody can see her, and it feels normal for once in the show.
For a little bit, yeah.
For a little bit, anyway.
Till next week. Okay, so Red, this whole episode was about him acquiring these antique nesting cabinets. He basically stole that woman's prized possession, by the way, in that first episode. Did he steal it? I assume he did steal it.
Well, yeah, and this is one of the things that I was kind of like, okay, he said, hey, can I trouble you for a glass of water? Okay, this is where the switch happens. Mm-hmm. But we never saw the switch, and it seemed like she came back with the water fairly quickly. So how fast was he able to open the cabinet door, make the switch, close the cabinet door? Like, they didn't show the actual switcheroo. And I thought that was really an interesting choice. I don't know if that was intentional or a miss on the edit. I don't know, because I was expecting to actually see the switcheroo happen. But I guess you have to just assume it, right?
Yeah, I kind of liked it. I didn't need to see it.
I think it was fun when just he was kind of looking it. At it like he was Indiana Jones trying to swipe out the idol.
Throw me the idol. I throw you the whip. We do find a little bit more about his dad, whoever you may think that person is. He says, my father was fascinated by insects. By the time I was six, he taught me that a microscope is essentially two convex lenses in a relationship to each other. Is that right? Mm-hmm. I remember that right? Finding a new world felt like a miracle. And what he sees here is someone he misjudged. What he left wasn't about Cassandra. He had obligations and whatnot. Did you take anything away from that other than a little insight into his dad?
No, I thought this was another classic, just Red making up a story to fit the moment. To be quite honest, I didn't really read much into it. I do like the two convex lenses are together in a relationship with each other. That line was probably something we should probably hone in on a little bit more and see how that relates to either him and Liz or him and Katarina or what have you. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's mentioned father, again, if you're on the Red Arena camp, it probably would mean something for Dom, for those folks. But at the same time, it could, again, just be a story. I mean, it goes back... You know, take Madeline Pratt, for example, another one of Red's flames. And he's talking about that whole, I came home at Christmas and there was all this blood and that's why I didn't get back to you. And he has an excuse for why he didn't continue the relationship with Madeline. This is very similar of, hey, here's the reason why I didn't come back and hang out with you, because I had to jump into Liz's life and protect her, which is more believable. But the question is, are these just stories that Red made up, or is there truth in them that we should be taking?
Well, we've met two of these women, and yeah, sure feels like he was quite the ladies' man before the whole issue with Liz came up and he had to come back.
Sure.
He had to fulfill those obligations, as he said. Mm-hmm. So he was quite the ladies' man.
Could be.
Ladies' man.
Yep.
All right. Why he left wasn't about Cassandra. We found out at the end. I had obligations to the young woman you're watching over. I hope not, now that she's not in jeopardy. No obligations except to watch her daughter dance at Sleeping Beauty tomorrow night. And when they go there and they're watching it, what happens is Red and Cassandra, they sell these boxes and they're going to head off to the south of France after they watch Agnes at the ballet. Whoops. I'm ready to say goodbye. She wants to leave because when she watches him, you may have come into her life out of obligation, but you're staying in it for love. Again, you may have come into her life out of obligation, but you're staying in it for love.
Yeah, and that's her take on it. I mean, there might be a deeper take.
Always.
Still be related, might still whatever. But what we're seeing from Cassandra here is that there's no way Red's ever going to leave Liz aside.
No, and he doesn't really want to. Now, well, I think he would have, though. I just got the feeling he was going to. He felt very serious. He was going to leave.
Yeah, it seemed like it. It seemed like
he was... I don't think he was going to leave forever. I just think he was going to go to France with her and spend, you know, a weekend and have a little time.
Yeah, it definitely seems like he was at least willing to have a vacation. Like, Katarina's dead, so I'm good for right now. But yeah, let's go take a vacation for a while.
Let's have 4 days of whoopee time.
And Debbie would get 2 weekends off in a row.
Yes! I think that's it. Anything else from these 2 hours that you want to talk about?
No, I mean, it's fun to be back. It's always good to see more Blacklist on TV, which is always great. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious to see how we're gonna fill the time until we actually get to what the real crux of the season's all about. And then I'm really excited to see how the season's gonna end, because we now know that season 8 is on the docket for next year.
Were you excited about season 8 getting announced?
The inside honesty or the outside honesty?
Both. Yeah.
I'm excited that we get to hopefully finish the story. Hopefully we're hoping that maybe this would be the last end of the year. Not that we want people to lose their jobs and all that fun stuff, but the story starts to suffer if it drags out too long when you have a mythology series. Yep, so from a story perspective, we were hoping that this was going to be the end. So if it's 22 next year, I'm kind of like, it's going to be a little bit more like this, where it's a fun episode, but it doesn't serve the mythology at all. So I'm hoping that maybe we can just finish the mythology this year and then do a lot of cool backstory and how it all fit together. Season 8's like a retrospective.
That would be kind of cool. I don't know how you do it, though. I mean, they know they've got the master book, right? So I don't know how you would do that. Yeah, I was happy for everybody involved that they got another season. And whenever the final season is, like, if it's next year, if it's this year, it's obviously not this year. If it's next year, if it's the year after that, whatever the final season is, I just want them to have enough time so they can lay it out. Right. That's all I want. I mean, because you know you're coming to the end. This is going to be 8 seasons now. At some point, you're going to hit the end, unless you're Grey's Anatomy, which never stops.
Grey's Anatomy is now dead to me.
Okay. But as a show, it's still going to air for a while.
Yes,
I'm saying, like, if you know, you always risk that. But if a mythology show, obviously you need to lay your cards out. I just like every show that has this kind of mythology to have the opportunity to finish their story in the way they see fit.
Yeah.
All right. We want to take a quick second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting the show by going to Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Special big thanks to our honorary blacklisters, Doug and Patricia. Also, special shout out to our task force members, Lacey, Marilyn, Judy, and Sharon. All of these people received cool gifts from us, and you could get a cool gift as well for donating at the $20 level or higher. Plus, if just 10 people pull the trigger at the $20 level, we will reach our goal of doing the podcast live for you to watch us bicker and fight in Dolby Vision. It is even better than HDR.
It is, because I got a new TV over the holiday.
The high-definition red?
Well, the high-definition red is interesting, yeah. But I did. This is the first time I've actually watched The Blacklist in 4K, and I have to say, I was like, wow, it's like I'm actually sitting with Red at Debbie's birthday party.
Yeah, he's like telling me all about this. I'm like, I watched it 4K, it looked great. I'm like, welcome to like 3 years ago, yay.
And I don't think it's the 4K so much as it is the Dolby Vision HDR concepts. It's the brightness of the color. It really makes it stand out.
It very much looks like you are hanging out there in the office.
Sure does.
Yeah.
Sure. It's kind of creepy. And if $20 is too steep, we also have our $5 level. It gets you early access to special episodes and interviews before everyone else. So make sure you take a look at that, like the Conrad interviews. We had those up a couple days early for the Patreons. So go ahead and check that all out at P-A-T-R-E-O-N. patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Click the dollar sign in your podcast app if it's there, or the link in the show notes, and fill the fedora and get some awesome rewards for yourself. Stay tuned. Much more show coming up right after this.
What if you could live your life without limits, where every desire you ever imagined could be fulfilled? Experience Westworld, a show where every human's dark side will be revealed. After watching each episode, listen to Beyond Westworld, a podcast featuring humans and hosts from around the park diving deep into HBO's illustrative narrative. Every hero has a code, and so do you. Download your itinerary and the show at beyondwestworldpodcast.com or your podcast app of choice.
Hi, it's Megan Boone, and you're listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we feature two of Red's scenes from the show, and then we get to vote over on the website, which is your favorite, over on theblacklistexposed.com. Just look for the post for Victoria Fenberg and the mid-season 7 premiere with Cornelius Ruck. Our first clip comes from the first hour when Red and Liz talk about desire for things to be real.
It really is exquisite, and that's why.
It's exquisite because of what you know about it. Where it came from, who made it. It's intellectual. I like art that's more emotional.
The Forger certainly played on our emotions.
The Forger. The one you found and won't turn over to us.
The counterfeits are nearly flawless, which is enough. Because our desire for them to be real obscures any imperfection. Much like your desire for the woman in Paris to be your mother blinded you to the fact that she wasn't.
It wasn't just my desire.
So she told you she was Katerina?
She did. And it's difficult for me to believe she wasn't.
I was convinced my casket was authentic. It was nearly impossible for me to believe it wasn't. But it was a fake. And she was, too.
Is that why you gave us this case? To show me how easy it is to mistake something that's fake for something that's real?
No, I gave you the case so I could get my hands on the casket and sell it for an obscene amount of money.
You got it just so you could sell it?
Yes. And the buyer is apparently very impatient.
Our second clip comes from the second hour when Red shares information about building microscopes.
My father was fascinated by insects. Fancied himself an amateur entomologist. Ah, right. By the time I was
6, my father had taught me that a microscope is essentially two convex lenses in relationship to one another. I'll never forget the joy on his face as he helped me make my first one, then watched as I went into the yard in search of bugs. The idea that a whole world that I couldn't see had suddenly revealed itself and been brought into focus felt like a miracle.
Because it was, given how often we miss what's right in front of us.
What I see right in front of me is someone I misjudged. What's happened tonight, I should have known. You could never have done it.
Which was your favorite this week? If you are convinced that Red's statement to Liz was the truth, vote hashtag Red Real. Or if you can finally see things in focus, vote hashtag Red Lens.
Okay, now we move to Special Agent Intel. Rachel Towns posed a question. I've read so many things about Liz haters, yet let's remember. A, Liz does not know her real parents on a personal level at her age, and she is only now getting tidbits here and there about them and can't know for sure if they are true. B, the person who raised her was a grifter, which means he was especially good at conning people, yet making her that way. C, she repressed so many memories and then also had her memories manipulated, so would you honestly know who to trust and not trust if you couldn't remember? Good point. D, the number one on the FBI Most Wanted list showed up out of the clear blue and tells her he can give her answers on her past. How would you react? I'd have a coronary and a lot of obscenities. E, she is trying to balance all of these emotions without letting them affect her abilities as a mother and her profiling, but she has to question herself because she is constantly questioning who to trust and who not to trust, which makes her job 10 times harder, along with being the main communication network for the FBI's most wanted fugitive who may or may not have a blood relationship to her. An important note, if she pulls out, that means many bad people will not be caught, so she can't even leave it. Like, that's an important thing to mention, right, too. F, so I ask you, would you behave honestly any different than Liz, given the circumstances that she keeps getting slapped with? Joy, answer that one.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I still have to do my job, so I still have to ask the questions and be the profiler that I am. I would be more and more frustrated. I think I'd still be on the... It's the back and forth. It's the, I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I love you, from like the season 2, season 3, that I think is where people got annoyed with it, because it's like, stick to one or the other. Either you're frustrated with this guy because he's not giving you the answers you need from your past, or you like this guy because he keeps you safe and he makes sure that everything's taken care of. But you can't have it both ways. So I don't hate the Liz character. I don't think that she's necessarily got the focus of the writing that she needs to be like the lead in the show. You know, I think that's pretty much more what it is. It's she's put in these weird situations that I think a normal FBI profiler agent would act in a different way. So I think that's where the Liz hate comes from. But at the same time, I think she does have a point that if I had all this going on in my life, I'd be pretty like, well, I don't know what to do. I'm kind of paralyzed at that moment. Do I hate you? Do I like you? Do I keep it a secret? Do I tell you? Do I just blurt it out like I do to wrestler all the time? I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting quandary that the fans have with this character over the 7 years.
Yeah, Rachel, I know anybody that's listening knows that I am not a Liz hater. I firmly believe the character gets really short shift in turn, or shrift, one of those words, in terms of the fandom.
Short-changed.
There you go. That works better. Gets unfairly chastised in the fandom. I really do believe that. And yet everyone will treat Red like he's a golden hero. And it's just like, okay, if I was in her shoes, I'll be honest, he'd be strapped to a chair with a vice grip around his parts, because I'm getting answers, you know, and I'm not going to leave until I get them. I'm not going to be like Kirk either. I don't care what you tell me, unless it's the truth. We ain't going anywhere. And that's just, so I'm always in support of Liz, because I feel like she's living the hardest life. I mean, she can't just pick up and walk away. She's constantly got to deal with this guy who she thinks she can trust, and then she can't trust, and then she thinks she can trust. She's in desperate need of a familiar figure, which is common in anyone who would be without knowing her real parentage and she's desperately looking to fit in and know where she belongs. That's normal. That's psychologically normal for people with those kinds of life conditions. And the only thing I ever really struggle with is the profiling angle, because sometimes I feel like they forget she's a profiler. And I mean, that happens with any show that's been on for a long period of time. You get characters that people are more focused on other characters, so therefore the focus comes away and you'll get an accidental slip up with a character. And the secret thing, like, keep a secret for longer than 8 minutes. But it's starting to become part of her character. So, I mean, it's not really a character flaw. She does it all the time, right? That's just who she is. So I'm not in that group. I don't understand that group. I don't besmirk them anything. I mean, it's your fandom. You can do whatever you want. It's just not something I subscribe to. So I'm totally with you on that.
All right. Well, this seemed appropriate given the Red and Liz conversation in the car this week. Lucy Stevenson wrote, Agent Keen spent so much time on DNA tests with Reddington, but has at once done the same thing for Katerina. Thoughts?
Ah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Now, to be fair, I don't think she had a lot of time to think about doing the DNA test, because it was only in the last episode that she said, oh, you're Katerina. She wouldn't have had any reason to do a DNA test on a nanny.
True, but after she figured it out, I mean, that's a good point. But also, well, she could have just ripped a piece of her hair out. Really, that's all she would have had to do, put it in a Ziploc baggie. I'm sure she's an FBI agent. She probably has them in her purse, right?
Yeah, maybe when they were down in those secret catacombs that mysteriously became real all of a sudden at the bottom of their apartment. She's like, you know, here, I'll cause a distraction. You go this way to escape. I'll go double back and be part of my people that I actually work with and give her a hug. And then as she gave her a hug, then ripped out the hair strand or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because that seems like something that you would come back then with the... Yeah, the mid-season premieres be like, do a DNA test on that hair strand.
That's a good point. I never even thought about that. Yeah, that's very astute. I really like that.
And then you could have had an episode of how the DNA test got tampered with, or someone stole it, or you know, it got switched or something. I don't know.
We're gonna get the
Monday morning quarterback in the comeback.
We'll find out that Park could have done it the whole time, but she lost the evidence and she's a new one on the team, so therefore nobody trusts her. There you go. Dave Arlotto has a thought. They need to take this show in a new direction. Tired of this mystery. Would like to see them develop a new storyline. Would it not be a cool plot twist where Red turns out to be Wrestler's father and not Liz's father? Not really for me. I think that would be weird. How would you spell that one?
I don't know if it... Well, I mean, there was that whole time and during, was it season early season one, maybe into season two, when we're like, well, our Wrestler and Liz, brother and sister, and all that other fun stuff. And granted, you're just speculating at that time. And of course, the people that still want, you know, Wrestler and Liz to be boyfriend, girlfriend are still out there too. I mean, this is like one of those things where it's a cool twist, but at the same time, it doesn't serve the purpose of the show to do it. So I don't know. It's not like I wouldn't care either way, I guess is where I'm at with that. Could be his father, didn't know him or whatever. But again, it's that whole, like, does everybody have to be related to everybody on the show that we've talked about in the past? And we don't want that to happen either. So for me, it's a, eh.
Yeah.
Eh.
Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't work for me personally.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you run the risk for, oh, everybody's connected. Dear Lord.
Right.
It's just. You know,
I agree with the develop a new storyline, though. Like, we need to answer the mythology and do something different. Like, I think that's how you revive the show going forward. Right now, the dragging out of the mythology, I think, is what's hurting the show. If we just answer the mythology then give some, like, and here's why the mythology works. And then give us some episodes about explaining how the mythology's worked this whole time.
And tying back to Rachel's thing from earlier, a lot of the reason why Liz's character suffers is because the mythology gets drug out. So she has to constantly go back and forth in order for the story to continue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. Jenny Green is troubled. What bothers me is there's mine for the day. Jenny Green is troubled. What bothers me is whoever Reddington is, it's his own secret. He asked people to respect that. He warned people to respect that. He killed people to protect that. Why can't people just leave that alone instead of all this prying? It's nobody else's secret. It doesn't belong to anybody who doesn't already share in it. The Townsend Directive is not about Red. It's about Katarina and her imposter. Clearly, she's on the Ficarina team. Of course, we fans all want to know, and we deserve to know, safe on the other side of our screens. But, what if the writers always intended to leave the secret unrevealed from the very beginning?
You mean like even at the end?
Like who Red is was never part of the plan.
I would be livid and I would curse the show. I don't think that was ever the intention. 100%. In fact, I know that. I know John Bokenkamp has a plan. So it's a, but if you're asking a what if, she's asking a what if.
Yeah.
So she's asking, you know, I would say
Red's secret has always been Red's business.
It would ruin the show completely for me.
Yeah. I think
too much time has been invested in that, who he is. And I disagree with you completely. Liz 100% deserves to know who he is and why he's in her life. Aside from that, I mean, I just feel
does
like
she though? I mean, there
yes!
was there was that whole
yes!
there was that whole
not
death
debating it. Yes, 100%. Yes, anybody who argues it, argue with Amir. I'm not arguing it. Yes, she deserves to know. I don't care what Red says. He's not the just. He doesn't get to decide everything. You keep bringing wreckage into her life. She deserves to know.
Okay, done. She deserves to know, but when she had the opportunity to know, she didn't ask the question.
Which point?
The death row.
And yeah, and he also should have told her then. So as far as I'm concerned, he's kind of a jackass in terms of this information. Yeah, I said it. Hate me. I love Red, but he's kind of a jackass with this information.
It's always so much fun.
I'm going to get some emails over that. I just know it.
It's fine.
You cannot say negative things about the Red.
I don't know. It's an interesting quandary. Like, what if you get down to the end of the day and it's literally the I love you moment. It's the it doesn't matter who you are. I'm just glad you were there for me. Cut to black.
I would be livid. You'd be livid too. Who are you? Who are you fooling? You would pick up your remote and throw it at your TV. Tell the truth, Troy. You would.
Well, if Katarina that we saw at the start of the season is revealed to be the Katarina for reals, definitively, mm-hmm. no questions about it, then I would be like, I don't really know who Red is. But if it's a fake arena and you don't tell me if he's the mother or not, I would throw my remote at the TV.
Did you say, oh my God, I can't even pay the...
look at that, Oosa. Aaron's tongue-tied. Tongue-tied.
Oosa. Don't need to tell me that. I'm all good. Don't need that information.
Oh my gosh. Oh, good questions from the fans this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's going to conclude this episode. 6 seasons are on Netflix. Now's the time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, your neighbor. And when you do, please also recommend they listen and subscribe to The Blacklist Exposed podcast. And that's why you always listen to the end of the episode. Don't just quit when we're done with the regular episode. There's more stuff. Always.
Always.
And The Blacklist Exposed podcast is the one we want to recommend. All case files can be found at theblacklistexposed.com and everywhere a great podcast can be found. Don't forget, we're also, as you heard earlier, Beyond Westworld is also back.
Yes, beyondwestworldpodcast.com. New website for that. Definitely come back and join us for season 3 because you'll get more and a lot more of Aaron and Troy yelling at each other because that's a thinker show. And if you want to hear other...
I've heard reviews on season 3 that are not so promising that maybe they dumbed it down a little bit.
A little bit too much?
We'll see.
But again, they've probably only got like 5 episodes. They don't have the whole picture yet.
True. True.
All right. For more great Aaron and Troy hijinks, as we mentioned, follow us on the social medias. I'm at Troy Heinrichs. He's at Aaron Smirks. And together we are at The Blacklist GSM on Twitter. Talk about the show, the podcast, or what type of artwork you fancy.
Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. Would Red have left had Cassandra not blocked him? Dun, dun, dun.
We talked about that, but we want to hear what you. We'll put up a poll and we'll find out next week what you guys think.
Take care, guys.
See ya. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
And now, the many noises that Aaron Peterson makes.
This is the mid-season 7 premiere opened up. Already we start. I was trying to figure out what you wrote here. To the young woman you're watching over is what she said. You...